The following is a KMOX sports special.
Our city, our spirit.
Welcome to the City Spotlight.
It's in! City goal!
Now, your host, Jen Cease, on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
It's soccer time on KMOX Radio. It's time for the City Spotlight. I'm Jen Cease, and I'll be your host for this one-hour edition of the City Spotlight. John Camp is alongside me on the controls here in the studio. Well, of course, we've had two games, under the helm of Coach David Critchley. We're going to review some of those results, talk a little bit about that with hearing some audio from Coach Critch earlier this week, plus hearing, as we always do, from Dale Schilly, St. Louis City Academy Director. He works really lockstep with David Critchley, of course, on the development side of St. Louis City, and he's our game analyst on Y98. He was there in Portland this last weekend as City fell to Portland by a score of 2-1. We'll talk a little bit about that. And at the bottom of the hour, we'll switch gears and talk a little bit about the U.S. men's national team. Of course, their disappointing loss in a friendly to Switzerland, 4-0. A lot of question marks being thrown out there on social media about the direction of the national team ahead of the World Cup that's going to be hosted here in the United States. So we'll talk a little bit about that with Mike Sorber, a St. Louis native, member of the St. Louis Soccer Hall of Fame, former national team player himself and pro. He'll join us to talk about that. And then we're going to wrap up the hour, talk a little bit of high school. Girls high school soccer wrapped up over the weekend. And we have winners in the different classes. And Maddie DiMaria from Coriezu will join us to talk a little bit about, you know, her and her team's, victories. They've got two victories now, 2 years in a row. We'll talk a little bit about 8:45 or so. Before we talk a little bit about the on-pitch performance, I want to give a few shout-outs for some off-pitch things that St. Louis City is doing. Kick Hunger right now is an effort that City and Schnucks are working on this week. Players were out today at the Butler Hill Schnucks in South County for a meet-and-greet, and it's a week-long drive to benefit Operation Food Search. They did this last year as well. All Schnucks locations this week will take non-perishable food donations. You can stop by, be a part of that effort if you like to do that. Alongside that, the Goodwill is a donation drive this next game. This game is on Saturday at 3:30 at Energizer Park facing the LA Galaxy. Goodwill donation drives will be going on at the stadium. Fans can bring gently used clothing and shoes and drop them off at stadium entry points. So if that's something that you'd like to get involved with, you can do so this weekend. So great effort off the pitch. Let's talk a little bit about the on-pitch performance of St. Louis City. Now, with two games under the belt of the leadership of caretaker head coach David Critchley, you'll hear me call him Critch a lot. He's got a win and a loss. Halfway through the season, City is still sitting kind of at that bottom part of the Western Conference. They're number 14 right now, just ahead of their next opponent, the LA Galaxy, who is at the bottom of their conference. City's record right now is 3-9-5. And yesterday after training, Coach Critchley talked with the media about the performance. He feels they in Portland, they deserved a better result in a game challenged with being not only away, but with high temperatures.
The data showed it, the performance showed from the eye test that I think it was a solid performance. We go away to Portland in tough conditions and we beat them in many categories. The result is something that hurt because I felt like we deserved so much more from the game. But we've analysed it. We've definitely said, here's the improvements that we need for this week. And now it's another game on Saturday.
And no matter the location, whether it's home or away, the starting lineup or the substitutions made in whatever minute he chooses, Critch and the team are always planning to get the full 3 points.
I asked the players to be brave. I'm going to be brave as a coach. A lot of my substitutions in the game was guys that were going to come in and try and score goals. Even the two players in the 88th minute were attacking players. It showed my mentality that I wanted to go here and try and get 3 points, maybe instead of sitting back and trying to go for one. This team, this club, we need 3 points in every game we step into, and that's my objective, is how do I try and get the 3 points.
Now, for the Portland game in particular, Critch talked a little bit more about his reasoning behind subbing the players that he chose. He specifically talks a little bit about Brendan McSorley from City 2, Jake Gerwood-Reich, or JGR, and Joey Zielinski.
Yeah, they had a good training week. They were the profile of the players that I needed in their moments. I thought Brendan could get in there and stretch the game, especially in transition. We knew that they were going to also try and go for another goal, so Brendan's ability to run in behind for us was going to be something that we looked at. You know, JGR, he's a good ball winner. He's athletic. He can cover space. Joey had a fantastic game against San Jose. Could have easily earned the right to start in this game as well. To bring Joey in, I had full trust he was going to come in and defend well, defend off the dribble well, defend 1v1 moments well. He had that unbelievable play at the end where we coughed up the ball, and I think he's making slide tackles in the box and then recovery plays as well. So all three came in and helped us impact the game.
Yeah, Joey Zielinski came up big. We had that as one of our post-game highlights, and that was a big play for him. And, of course, really good play also by the other players, Jake Goodwood-Reich, as well as Brendan McSorley, who subbed in. I would have preferred for Sean DeSilva to give him that pass on his breakaway with three defenders on him, but the team moving forward, ever, I'm sure that that was found in video review. Now, City, as you probably know, had the lead in the 50th minute thanks to Akil Watts. Congratulations to Akil for his MLS goal with hopes for the full 3 points, but it only lasted for about 5 minutes until Portland responded to level the score. You might think that maybe City would play for the tie at this point, especially with on-field temperatures of over 100 degrees, really hot. And if anybody's played on AstroTurf before, I feel like I just get blistered standing on the hot turf. You would think that maybe they would play for the tie for 1 point, but no, says Critch.
When you try to create an environment that every time you step on the field on the weekend, the mentality should be to go for a win. Now, you might be in a situation in a game where the momentum's on your, not on your side. You have a 10-minute window, like we score the goal. They respond very well for 10, 15, 20 minutes. Sure, in that moment, could we maybe tactically adjust the shape? But as we prepare for the weekend training, it's all about going to get 3 points on a weekend. I felt like we could have left Portland with 3 points. So obviously, my mindset as a coach when I was making substitutions and adjustments was to try and go and get 3 points and not hold on to 1 point.
Now, the City was still going for a win, like Dave Critchley talked about. It seemed like with the score level 1-1, the team might get away with stealing that point until the Portland corner kick and stoppage time. It was about 90 plus 2 minutes. And this is where the team not only looks at the players on the pitch for not maybe having their marks or not knowing what they're doing, who got lost, but it's also on the staff as well.
Yeah, I think obviously when you concede late from a set piece standpoint, everyone should have specific designed roles in their moments. So making sure that we are very clear with guys like, hey, here's our roles and responsibilities in dead ball situations for sure. Yeah, for us, we always analyse as a staff as well. We want to get better, just like the players want to get better. So that'd be probably a key moment for us as a staff moving forward.
Now, David Critchley was asked when he'd look at preserving a tie over still going for a win. And he said there's really only a few cases he would do that.
Probably in a moment where the momentum is just overall on their side. Their XG is out the window. Their field tilt is so much higher than ours. Their possession is so much higher than ours. You feel their moments as a coach. I'm not naive. I'm not going to sit here and say we're going to go and dominate every team. And there'll be moments where we have to be a defensive solid team. And we'll say a point is a good result. But up until about the 60th minute where we were just strictly looking at who's in favour of getting a 3 point result here, it was us. So I just tried to make them adjustments and try and go for it.
So the tie that might have felt like a win was a loss. So no points. The team training vibes, however, are still pretty high with a growth mindset top of mind.
Yeah, I think one of the things about a successful culture and a successful team is actually how you deal in failure. You know, I just showed them a quote today on the TV and I could name them all off. It's Kobe Bryant, obviously leading NBA championships, something like missed the most points in a game or something. Tom Brady, 7-time Super Bowl champion, makes the most interceptions. Like, so there's all this stuff to show you that even the world's greatest are going to fail. But how do you go out there with a growth mentality and how do you go out there and prepare for the following week? So the performance was great. So now for us, we have to get back out here. We have to get back to work. We have to improve. But like I told you guys in week 1, we have to enjoy that moment as well. We have to enjoy that process.
And that's not to say there aren't things to improve. Here are a couple of things that City has improved and Critch says he wants to continue to build upon.
For the 2 games I've been in charge, our field tilt possession in the opponent's half and the opponent's third specifically has gone up 49%, of you, I think the exact number is. In these difficult conditions, when it's hot, if you can have a high field tilt, you can pin the opponents all the way back into their own defensive third, you'll have more success than they'll have against you because now you eliminate them, you know, 80 yards away from our goal. One of the big key points for us is how do we continue to increase our field tilt every single game? General possession and then field tilt in their third is a number that I think with the right system in place, with the right trust of the players, with only 6, 7, 8 training sessions, I'm pretty confident we can improve that more.
So for those of us who like to look at certain stats, I suggest keeping a close eye on field tilt as well as general possession, particularly obviously possession in the front third of the field. But it's something that Critch and the team want to work on at training and make sure that it translates to the game. Now, player updates, at least what we have as of Tuesday. A lot of this is out already on social media, but to recap it here, Henry Kessler may be slow to train with the team during the week. He's still struggling with his hamstring, but it's a long season, and I think David Critchley was mostly, when he said he wanted to protect him, I think it's mostly protecting Henry from himself because he will tell you he wants to play and he will go out and play and do everything he can. So Henry Kessler is a question mark for the weekend. Edward Leuven, think likely he'll be out with his hamstring. Last week we saw after a training that the medical staff was working a little bit with him. He may have strained that. By the way, also on Edward Luvin, on a personal note, I shared it on my own Twitter, and it's out there. You can find it, Twitter X, at Jen Cease on Air. There is his church put out a little video with Edward Luvin, and we know from him talking with the media last year, pretty open and honest about his journey with his wife, Ilona, and brain cancer, but a really heartfelt message he kind of has there, and what his struggle has just been something surreal, and most of us probably can't comprehend, thankfully, and to try and play a game while you have a loved one struggling the way she has been has got to be immense. So I suggest, highly suggest you go out and check that out. But he was likely a question mark, likely out for this LA Galaxy game. Chris Durkin, he's day by day, man. When he took that shot in the game he appeared in, he was center back. I cringed because I know what that's like to hurt your MCL and then do a little bit too much with it before it's ready. Think he tweaked that. He's day by day with the strain. And we did ask about Rasmus Alm and Joachim Nilsson. They are not available for this weekend, although we do see them often training alone. City's next game, as we know, is home on Saturday back at Energizer Park. Afternoon match against LA Galaxy, 3:30 p.m. kickoff with pregame on our sister station, Y98, at 3 p.m. So with all that in mind, we'll talk a little bit more about the lessons learned from the Portland game and the upcoming match against the LA Galaxy, bottom of the Western Conference foes. We've got that coming up next with Y98 game analyst Dale Schilly. He's up next on KMOX.
Now, back to the City Spotlight.
Our city! Our spirit!
Once again, Jen Cease on KMOX.
Welcome back on the City Spotlight. Jen Cease here, and joining me now for our second segment to talk about City's on-pitch performance, particularly with their last game, Portland, Dale Schilly, St. Louis City Academy Director and game analyst on Y98 for all City games. Dale, thanks for joining me, and have you cooled down from your Portland visit?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man, that was a warm one. It sits down in the hole. When you get off the bus to get into the stadium, you walk down a pretty long asphalt walkway or driveway, actually. And when you get down to the bottom, there's no air and it's turf. And the sun was beating down. It was warm.
Yeah, for sure. So in the last segment I played, you know David Critchley well, and you can probably imagine a lot of his comments revolve around a growth mindset. He's pretty straightforward about what needs to be worked on. I chuckled a little bit, Dale, when he talked to us, because he talked a lot about field tilt, which is something you've been talking about in a lot of our Y98 pregame shows. But, really talked about, just despite the result, being happy that field tilt percentage had improved, and he's looking to increase those possession numbers as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, field tilt and all the data, you can turn it around and twist it and make it work for you any way you want. Field tilt is one where if you're playing the percentages, the longer you have the ball in a dangerous area compared to the other team having it in the area where they could score, whoever has it there the most is more likely to create more chances, or the better chances at least. And, I would say for the majority of the year, we have been on the wrong side of the field tilt, and not just by a little, but by quite a bit. I mean, we led the league in block shots and defensive clearances and other teams were leading in terms of their number of touches in the 18-yard box, a number of entry passes into the 18, passes received inside the final third. I mean, all sorts of numbers that could be indicators of field tilt. So I think Critch is right on with the idea of we have to play in the other team's end to increase the number of chances that we have to score. Now, the trick is, can you do that without backing up the other team inside their own 18-yard box where it's so congested that you can't get a free chance at goal? So you have to be able to, get through the middle third of the field into the front third of the field rapidly so that the other team isn't organized and you can create higher quality chances to score goals.
You know, one comment I didn't have time to play in the first segment was a little bit, he talked a little bit at the end of him talking to us on Tuesday, was about, you know, working with individual players, that he's meeting with each individual player to talk about some of the things that they want to work on, they want to improve on. For example, he talked about Marcel Hartl being, you know, a very intelligent player. Maybe sounds like Marcel can get into his own head a little bit, making sure, you know, he knows he can play free. You got to play, be responsible for what you're responsible for, but I want you to know you can play free and take some risk. And he made a comment about Joao Klaus, about saying, you know, in fact, after this press conference, I'm going to go work with Klaus and we're going to talk a little bit about him finishing and, you know, get him back, right? Work on getting him back to, you know, his technical abilities and doing that. And it's funny, I report on these usually each time we have that, and got a lot of pushback from the social side saying, you know, why are we working with our DP on his job and finishing? And I understand that on one hand. On the other side of it, I know that in Major League Baseball, that pitchers all of a sudden can't throw their signature pitch, that hitters go into slumps, and we have all kinds of sports that have people that don't perform at certain periods of time. Is this a thing to be concerned about at this point in time, with Klaus missing so many games with his injuries in his 2.5 years with City? Loaded question.
Yeah, that and the fact that he just doesn't look comfortable in front of goal. So, yeah, I mean, I think it is a concern, and it's important for, if Critch feels like that he can reach him, and I know he has a good relationship with Joao, if they can connect and he can help push him across the line to where he's more comfortable in front of goal, then I think that's a positive step. And why not have that connection? Why not do the extra work that it takes to connect with the player to maybe help them find form that they once had? You know, I would say it starts with Klaus. It starts with him being a goal scorer in training, you know, just letting him or finding ways to get him to score goals in practice, so he starts to get that, get his groove back in front of the goal in the game. So, no, look, nobody feels worse than him when he misses chances. And you know that it was like a dagger in his gut, the one that he missed in the second half over top.
Yeah.
He scores that goal 9 times out of 10, I'm sure. You put him in front of a goal in training like that, and I'm sure he scores that goal. He just happened to miss that one. Look, it's not wasted time. Yes, we should be concerned because we need him to score goals. That's what he's paid for. But Critch is not wasting his time. He's investing his time into helping the guy that has been paid to score goals, to help bring us across the line, help us get 3 points. He's investing his time to help us get there. Look, Critch knows that it's his job. He's trying to figure out how he can keep this position, and in order to keep this position, he needs to win games so he can make the playoffs.
Yeah, and I would imagine, you know, another thing that Critch is good at is knowing what he has personally, right, with City too. He's worked with you for the academy. He's seen players go through and grow up, and, you know, really got some nice confidence. He talked about, you know, putting players like Brendan McSorley, and he's going to be our next player profile on the Y98 pregame show, and talking about his confidence is, if you do well in training and you're able to play here, you can certainly play in the game.
Yeah, and look, again, like, he knows the level. He's had guys drop from the first team into City 2. So he's had that comparison before he jumped into the first team. He's been able to compare what guys look like in games. Now, albeit, you know, you've got first teamers dropping down to second. Maybe they lose a little bit of energy and enthusiasm when they're in there, but he can certainly see what they look like, what their decisions are like, where they are technically. And he knows who from the second team can compete. Obviously he thinks McSorley can compete at that level. And I would say, based on Brendan's work rate and his nose for the goal around the 18, he's a worthwhile risk as well.
So, talking a little bit, I know that you will be missing you on this next match with LA Galaxy, Joey Zanaboni, and I'll do my best to do a good Dale impression of analysis. But if we can get some of your early game analysis, I know that when we faced off with LA Galaxy, the scoreline went well for City. They were missing Ricky Pooch. They were missing Paintsil. Still missing Pooch, but Paintsil's back, as I understand. And they've, you know, I think started to find some late, you know, mid-season, a little bit of form. How dangerous is this game for City on Saturday?
Yeah, I think this is a dangerous game because you know, the games that we've had so far, the expectation is that we weren't, you know, in Critch's tenure, games that we weren't expected to win. We got a win. We did well in Portland, would have liked to at least got a point. But look, Critch was rolling the dice and wanting to get 3 points. So he made some subs and made some changes that is certainly worth his, it's under his jurisdiction, and he can make those calls. And that's, you know, that's who he is. And he went for the 3 points. LA, on the other hand, has only won the one game. And so the expectations are a little bit different now in this game. Two things. One, Berkey was really good when we played them out in Los Angeles, made 2 or 3 point blank saves when the game was at zeros. We scored on a couple of really terrific counterattack goals where we won the ball on a high press in the middle third of the field and broke out on the break and scored a couple terrific goals. So it was a closer game than what the score was. And as you said, LA won their last game. And then they had a week off to help recover, to help get some legs back, to get through that push like we just got through a push. So that extra week of rest is going to help them heal and get back into some form. So I think this is going to be a really difficult game, and LA is not as bad as their record shows. They've got talent. They've got players that can win games. This is going to be a difficult game.
All right. Thanks, Dale. We'll do our best without you and look forward to seeing you afterwards.
Thank you.
That was Dale Schilly, St. Louis City Academy director and normally our game analyst on Y98 for all City games. I'll be filling in for him this weekend as City take on LA Galaxy. Hang with us on the City Spotlight. We're going to switch gears and talk a little bit about the U.S. men's national team. If anybody was watching, I'm sure a lot of people were. They recently lost their friendly with Switzerland 4-0. St. Louis native and former national team player Mike Sorber joins us to talk about it next on KMOX.
Now, back to the City Spotlight.
Our city! Our spirit!
Once again, Jen Cease on KMOX.
Back on the City Spotlight, we talk more soccer, but this side, the international side of the game, the national and international side of the game. If you were watching, and how could you not, the U.S. has lost, the men's national team has lost 4 straight matches for the first time since 2007. And with their loss to Switzerland last night in a friendly, some say it's arguably the lowest feeling around the program since the U.S. lost to Trinidad and Tobago in 2017, failing to qualify for the 2018 World Cup. Joining me now to talk about, you know, give us some sense and give us some maybe hope is Mike Sorber, St. Louis native. He's a Hall of Famer, former U.S. men's national team player, as well as professional. Mike, thanks for your time this evening.
Hi, Jen. Thanks. And I'll just tee you up. 2007, that's when I was with the national team. So
that's
I can
right.
relate to 4 losses in a row.
That's right, right? And so when you look back on that and then you see the game now, and you've been around the game, you've seen the progress. There's so much that's changed on the good side. There are those of us who've played that sometimes look back, and if we have kids who play in the game, there are some things that we see that are good different, maybe not so good different. Is this a time to panic for the U.S. men's national team, knowing that we are hosting a World Cup right now? Are they as lost as some seem to think they are?
Yeah, we're in a bit of trouble right now, for sure. You know, the biggest difference in 2007, the first 3 games we were in Copa America in Venezuela. We had just won the Gold Cup. The European guys had to go back. We couldn't get them released because Copa America wasn't our confederation tournament, right? So we lost to Argentina, one of Messi's first games. We were actually up 1-0, lost 3-1. We lost to Paraguay. We lost to Colombia. Then we went to Switzerland. Funny enough, Olaf played in that game.
No, seriously?
We lost 1-0 in Switzerland, so that was away.
Wow.
And then we came home and we played Brazil in New York. It was actually maybe Neymar's first game with the national team. So, you know, those were good opponents. Brazil was home, but they had quite a squad at that time. So the difference now is, or back then we had just come off the Gold Cup win against Mexico. That was excellent. That qualified us for the Confederation Cup. So there were a lot of positives, but we still had a good 3 years to prepare, 3.5 years to prepare for the World Cup. Where right now you're coming off of Panama, Canada. Okay, Turkey's decent and Switzerland's very good. But a lot of those were at home. And yeah, right now there's a lot of change. There's a lot of questions. You know, you have a coach that's for sure a good coach, but he doesn't have a good idea about the landscape. He doesn't have a good idea about the roster. The players don't have a good idea of what the roster is or, you know, where they are in their career right now. So, yeah, it's not a good time right now. Hopefully they'll figure some pieces out, but it's going to be a real challenge moving forward here for the next year.
Yeah, you know, I've seen him before, heard from him, read quotes from Coach Pochettino talking about, you know, development over results. But at some point in time, right, results are going to go. And there's just a lot that's swirling around this team right now from, you know, former players like Tony Meola saying, hey, you got to get an American coach on staff if you're going to understand the landscape, to former players also like Landon Donovan kind of, you know, taking some hits at some of the players like, you know, Pulisic and saying, hey, you know, I know you're technically maybe superior to what we were back in the day, but you got to toughen up. You got to play for pride in country. Is it one thing over the other? Is it all those things right now?
Yeah, I'd say it's a combination of a lot of things. And it's not just this year. This has been coming for quite a while. We could talk for days about it, and everybody's got a different opinion. There's a lot of veterans with, you know, they sort of pipe up when these things happen. But you know, look, everybody's gone through different challenges in their career and with the national team for sure. But right now there's definitely an urgency to try to figure out what's going on, what's best, how can we move forward, how can we figure out who the best coach is, or can he figure out what the best team is, and how do we get that on to the field and get some consistency with performances and results. And right now, it's like throwing darts, and they're just all over the place, and we can't seem to figure out where the target is.
You know, everybody can kind of stand by and be a backseat coach, but you've been on staff with U.S. Soccer, you're a coach yourself. If you could go in there or you could watch a game and say, if this one thing changed, I would kind of have hope. What would you work on first for this team?
Yeah, I mean, look, the biggest thing is when Pochettino first got in there, they talked about how it was much more competitive and the spirit was better, but that doesn't come out in the game at all. And so, look, the one thing we had from 2007 to 2010 was, you know, no matter what game we played, you could recognize what we were doing. We had guys that had an edge, their personality came out. There was a team spirit that they talk about, but that came out. Now, that doesn't mean we won all the games. Clearly, we lost four in a row, and we lost to Ghana, you know, after a great, great result in the World Cup where we thought maybe we could move on and get past the round of 16. But when you go back and watch those games, I mean, they were exciting. There were chances on both ends. Maybe we hit the post, maybe we hit the crossbar, and people would say, oh, it's just not good enough. But right now, to play a 90-minute game and to have zero shots on goal,
right?
Yeah, I mean, that just shows you or tells you, I don't know what's going on. There's just not enough of anything right now.
Sounds kind of like a little bit of our own club team here, our MLS team for a while that struggled with a bit of that spirit and identity. Seems like a U.S. men's national team might need a little bit of that as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, no matter what level you coach at, right now I'm working with a U-17 team, to your point, they need an understanding and a belief of what you're doing, how you're trying to do it, and how you're going to go after the game and how you're going to go after the opponent. And then when you sit back and the whistle blows, and after 90 minutes, you don't want to say, well, we had a couple good moments. You want to say, yeah, for 90 minutes we went after it. And okay, there were some mistakes. That's normal. Or maybe this guy wasn't quite good enough. But you hope at the end of it, in enough games, that you come out on top, that you've created more chances than the other team, that you've eliminated some of those mistakes. And at the end of the 90 minutes, you say, yeah, we put it all out there. Hopefully we scored some great goals. Hopefully we got the win. If not, we were right there. The game was on a knife's edge, and it just didn't go our way. But come on, we'll be ready for the next one.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Thanks so much for joining me this evening, and I hope I can hit you up again sometime soon.
Sounds good, Jen. Thanks.
That was Mike Sorber, St. Louis Soccer native, Hall of Famer, played for the U.S. men's national team, as you heard him talk about, and professionally giving us his thoughts on the U.S. men's national team that have a lot to work on before the World Cup. One more segment to go, and we go local with a player who checks all the boxes, high school, club, the international national side of the game. St. Louis youth player, soccer player, Maddie DeMaria is coming up next on KMOX.
Now, back to the City Spotlight.
Our city! Our spirit!
Once again, Jen Cease on KMOX.
Last segment of the City Spotlight. We close this one out right by talking some high school girls soccer. We have champions from the weekend. We've got Class 2, Clayton 2 over St. Vincent 0. That, by the way, is the fifth time, apparently, a school has won both the boys and the girls soccer championship in the same school year. Class 3, St. Joseph's 2, Fort Zumwalt South 1. Took that game to a thrilling and stressful overtime. I was on a parent chat for that, watching that, with a free kick golden goal by Maggie Drazda. And in Class 4, Koryaesu 4, St. Dominic 0, back-to-back champions for Koryaesu. And joining me now to talk about it is, you know, a girl who just has so many problems scoring, Maddie DeMaria, St. Louis soccer player for St. Louis Gallagher, Koryaesu, and also has appeared for the U.S. Youth National Team. Maddie, why can't you score goals?
Thank you so much for having me on here today. I'm really excited.
You got it. And I say that facetiously because your four goals in their semifinal win totaled 8 points, tying the single game record at the championships. Also tied the all-time record for the most goals in a single match. And then you go on to the final and had a record tying sixth at this year's Final Four. Tell me about this back-to-back wins with your high school team.
It's obviously, a dream come true. Going to state once and winning a championship is something that you dream of, and going back and being able to do it again is just, it's unbelievable. And it's really all credit to my team. We put together a great season, I think, led by amazing seniors and a great goalkeeper, and just our whole team and back line was all very cohesive. And our coaches led us through the season through ups and downs, but eventually we were able to come out on top. And I think we put together a great showing in the Final Four and in the state final, and it led us to victory. And it was awesome to do, not just once, but back to back. Yeah.
Yeah. And tell me a little bit about that, too, because you've said it before, to also promo the fact that you were on the Soccer Mom Sunday podcast. It's a podcast I have with the Soccer Dad Pod, you and your mom, Sarah, on there. And you talked also there, too, about the fact that you really rely on your team. You're an amazing goal scorer, but of course, there are 10 other players on the field that support you. How does your high school team support you in being able to help them get the results that you guys want to get together?
I think on the field, we just really take pride in like practice and competing and growing together and pushing each other to be the best version of ourselves on and off the field. And I think as we go into the field, we go together and we just know each other's strengths and weaknesses, and we try to play to that side of each other's strengths. And I think my teammates do a really good job at setting me up with the ball, giving me channels to drive, take my space, to create places for me to open up. They read me well, so I'm able to play them, find them in the spaces. And I think overall, it's just a very cohesive team, and we work together really well. And I obviously would not be able to do anything I do today without my teammates and those who are with me on the field. So, yeah, I owe it all to them.
Yeah, 100%. And that's important, too, because there are also times that I think that you probably have to adjust your game, because high school is a different animal, right, to play than your club team. You play with Scott Gallagher. Your role might be a little bit different there than in high school. In high school, I know for a fact, because I've heard players talk about double teaming you, right, triple teaming you if they have to. And that many times can draw players to you and away from other players, which requires you to then be a good team player and look at them for possible openings as well, right?
Yes, that's totally a factor. I mean, coming into high school, I sometimes do end up seeing a double team or even just one person man marking. So I think that creates a different challenge for me than club. I have to know where the center is at all times and just read my teammates, and they read me. And in doing that, I think it creates a challenge for me, obviously, but it also creates a challenge for them. And I think together were able to overcome that and just work together. I feel like I sometimes get in the spaces to find my teammates and they get in the spaces to find me. And it just all is put together really well in the field, obviously, after I've played with these girls for now being 2 years. So it really worked out well. And it does work out well.
Yeah. And of course, then, too, I would imagine at this point in time, being done with high school, you flip back to the club side of things. Things for Gallagher moving along, because now all the clubs are looking to close out their seasons in this next month and a half or so, right?
Yes, totally. So after winning this weekend on Saturday, I've now returned to club with all my teammates, which is really great because I totally miss them. I mean, they're some of my best friends. We're going to San Diego this upcoming few weeks for nationals. I think like the 22nd, 26th or something, we leave somewhere around there. We're going to San Diego. We're hoping for a good run down there. I'm really excited to go with my SLSGOA-ECNL Navy team. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be very exciting.
Yeah, and I can't forget to also mention that if people in the city audience are listening right now, because this show is mostly about City Spotlight, we do a local focus. If Maddie DeMaria sounds familiar to you, it's because likely you saw her carry out the match day ball earlier. And, last season when you were freshman Gatorade Player of the Year, tell me about that experience, too. I mean, how great was that to be in front of a full MLS stadium with the first team being honored for what you do on a high school pitch?
It was unbelievable. I mean, I have no words to describe it. Going out in front of my city and just being on the field in front of that big of a stadium and all the supporters and fans, it truly is incredible. And I think it's such a huge honor, and I'm very, very grateful. And it's such a memory that I'll remember and bring with me through the rest of my life. It was so much fun. I got out there, I got to bring out the ball. It was great. I had an awesome time, and watching the game after was super fun as well. And it always is a great time at City, so I love it. Yeah.
And last but not least, you know, you're a rising junior, and we all know if you got a rising junior in this game, you know that June 15th is a big day. It's when colleges can really formally contact you. Are you looking for that to be a busy day for you, or are you just focused on club right now?
I'm very excited for June 15th. I'm looking for it to be a busy day. Hopefully, I'm excited to see where the future takes me and who's interested in me and where my interests lead me to the best fit and the best program for me. And I think just looking ahead, like trying to find those places that value family and the traits that I look for, but also have the soccer and the academics as well, is something that I hopefully am looking to do in the future and find my place. Yeah.
Maddie, thanks for your time tonight, and best of luck. Congratulations, by the way, in high school, and best of luck in your finishing out your club season. We wish the best for you and hope to have you back on the show sometime soon.
Thank you so much. It was so nice talking to you guys. I really enjoyed it.
Appreciate that. That was Maddie DeMaria, St. Louis soccer player for St. Louis Scott Gallagher, Koryezu High School champions in Class 4. She's also appeared for the U.S. Youth National Team and gearing up for more soccer because it's just not done yet here in St. Louis. Thanks to all of our guests for the show tonight. If you missed any part of the City Spotlight, you can always find it free on the Odyssey app, the podcast section. The next MLS regular season game for St. Louis City is home, Energizer Park, this Saturday. It starts at 3:30 p.m. We'll have pregame on our sister station, Y98, at 3:00 sharp. I'm Jen Cease. Thanks for listening to the City Spotlight on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.